Our focus here at Proof to Product is on teaching people how to successfully sell their products to the wholesale market. But many of our community members sell through multiple sales channels, including licensing, custom work, direct-to-consumer online sales, and in-person retail markets. For today's episode, we're sharing a portion of a recent coffee chat that we hosted inside of our labs program. It was a roundtable on in-person retail markets, and we had three of our community members weighing in with their experiences and insights. Today, you'll hear from Emily of Emmy Creations, Danella from McKinnon Collective, and Kate from Bean Horse Car. They're sharing their thoughts surrounding the changing landscape in in-person retail markets, along with their best strategies, tips, and advice for folks who are considering retail markets. This episode is brought to you by our Email Marketing for Product Makers Guide. Did you know that 49% of your customers want to hear from you on a consistent basis? And yet, only a small percentage of product-based business owners are actively sending monthly emails to their direct-to-consumer and wholesale customers. Email marketing is hands down one of the best ways to create long-standing, strong connections with your customers. And sending consistent, nurture emails leads to repeat orders and larger orders. But sitting in front of a blank screen can feel really intimidating. So if you have struggled with what to say, when to send, or how to plan out your email marketing strategies, grab our free Email Marketing for Product Makers Guide at proof2product.com/email marketing. This workbook and the optional training that goes with it has helped hundreds of product makers plan out an entire year's worth of emails. No more sitting in front of your computer wondering what to say. And the best part, we will show you how to create systems and templates that you can rinse and repeat year after year. Grab your copy at proof2product.com/email marketing. I'm Katie Hunt, wholesale expert, business strategist, and mom of four. I'm also the host of the Proof to Product podcast. Since 2011, I've coached thousands of brands whose products can be found on the shelves of indie shops and big box stores all around the world. If you are a creative entrepreneur that makes and sells physical goods, you're in the right place. Here on Proof to Product, you'll learn new strategies for product development, sales, marketing, and more. It's like your weekly dose of business school, and we're going to help you confidently grow your revenue in your own way and at your own pace. So let's get started. Hey friends, welcome to our coffee chat. We are going to be talking about retail markets today. We've got three of our community members here to share their experiences. We've got Emily from Emmy Creations, Kate Pinto from Bean Horse Car Designs, and Danella from McKinnon Collective. So you probably have seen these ladies around the community offering lots of great advice. Danella's also done a training in labs about her setup and her marketing and all sorts of things. So if you haven't checked that out, definitely do. Emily did a training inside the community too on some of her tech she's using. And Kate's done a training in the community about hiring and supporting teams. So these guys are pros. You've already seen their faces. And I just want to thank all three of you for coming back today to do this panel with us. Yeah. Okay. So I want to go around real quick and just give folks an overview of the types of products you sell and what retail markets you do, if there's like a specific style or a geographic region and things like that, because I know you've all done a little bit of similar but different things as well. So Kate, you want to start off? What types of products do you sell? What markets do you do?
Sure. I sell primarily stationery products, art, greeting cards, stickers. I do have some mugs and some other things, but primarily stationery and art. Types of markets, they kind of range in size from in-store pop-ups to like larger craft artisan markets. And mostly in the Bay Area. I did do a couple in Southern California last year, but kind of Northern California Bay Area is where I do most of my things.
Fantastic. All right, Emily, you want to go next? Types of products you sell, markets you do?
Sure. My name's Emily from Emmy Creations, and I sell stationery, gifts, and apparel. And I kind of do conventions. So if you're not familiar, comic cons, anime expos, also do Asian-specific markets, including night markets, cherry blossom festivals, Lunar New Year festivals, that kind of vibe. And I travel a lot for a lot of the conventions. So I probably mostly it's on this coast in the California area, but I've traveled to like Chicago, New York, and just a lot of everywhere in the US that has a big show. Probably I'm going to try to go to. And it's a whole new nightmare traveling with merch and setup and everything, but it's another adventure for another day.
Yeah, let's get in. Thomason asked about unloading and loading, so we'll talk about a little bit of that later. We don't want to create trauma here, so we'll talk about it to the extent that you want. But Danelle, tell us about your product line and the types of markets that you participate in.
Hello, my name is Danella. I co-own the business with my husband, Adam McKinnon. We do handcrafted leather goods for the everyday person. We have done a wide range of small to large craft fairs like Renegade. If you're familiar in the West Coast, like Renegade, West Coast Craft. Also, we do a lot of street festivals and a couple private tech events as well. So huge wide range of things.
Yeah, I love how it's both general types of shows, novelty type shows, specific specialty shows. I think it's really important that we find our community and find where our products are going to sell best. So before we dive into some of the questions from all the students, I would just love to know, in your opinion, how have markets changed over the last year or two? I mean, I'm sure you've seen a lot as we've come out of the pandemic and people are shopping more in person again. Emily, you want to start first and then we'll go to the others?
Oh, man. I actually posted on Instagram and TikTok about this, how markets have become so much harder than they used to be. And a lot of people did weigh in and say that is what they're feeling. And I'm pretty sure, as we all know, it has a lot to do with the economy and the fact that there's been an influx of new artists and people wanting to do what we are currently doing, which is great, but also not great for us because we got more competition. So definitely there's a huge shift. I know a lot of people maybe that started or were there during right after the pandemic, there's a huge surge of buying, you know, the FOMO, like I missed out on buying everything during COVID. So we're just going to unload all our cash. So I feel like for those people that started then, they have a really interesting, unrealistic experience of, oh my God, this is so great. But in reality, that money runs out pretty quick because of stimulus checks and stuff like that, and the economy and that kind of stuff. So definitely, I think we're going into a downturn similar to 2008. And a lot of people that commented on my post that have been around since 2005, even, they're like, this is really, really, really similar to 2008. And it's necessarily going to be like this forever, but I just feel like we have to be aware of it. I know a lot of people are like trying to close their eyes against it, but the reality is it is happening and you do have to make some shifts to make yourself successful and stand out and stuff like that. So harder, but still slightly hopeful. Hang in there, everybody.
I would love to get into what shifts you are making, but I first want to hear from Danelle and Kate about what kind of changes you've seen in the market in the last year or two. Kate, you want to go next?
Sure. So it's interesting because Danelle and I are on similar market circuits. So we do some of the same markets, but we were very fortunate in that one of the market organizers did hold markets during COVID and made really big accommodations. You know, booths were 10 feet apart, masks were required and all of that. So we were able to still participate in markets. And because of that, people were so excited to have something to do that we actually saw one of my best years was actually smack dab in the middle of the pandemic. And that's when I launched my business. But there's the terrifying moment of everything shutting down and what are you going to do? And then it was just like, because we were one of the few activities available, we did see a lot of people. And then I noticed that since more things have opened, the attendance at those particular markets at least has decreased a lot, like significantly. So we saw a surge because of COVID, and then it's kind of died down since then. And that is actually kind of why I wanted to have this discussion, because I myself need ideas for what to do, because it has, especially last year took a big drop. So I'd like to see, and I have more success in higher populated areas. So if I go down to the city, then I have good market days, whereas the ones in smaller towns, I'm not seeing as much traffic and people are being understandably more conscientious of where they're spending their money. So yeah, that's kind of what I've noticed in the last couple of years.
That's helpful. Also too, going to the city or going to more densely populated areas, it's more work for you too. It's more cost. There's a lot more to it. So it's not as easy as just saying, hey, I'm going to head over to the city and do this thing. Danelle, what kind of shifts have you seen in the markets?
Very similar to what Emily is seeing, especially as small business owners with the economy and customer base, and just really shifting. For me personally, of course, our items are more high-end. When I mean high-end, we have a lot of high-price items. So a lot of customers are trying to be more strategically smart on what they're spending their money on. But one thing I've seen, it's mostly with business owners, is how strategic are we going to be with the type of craft fairs and festivals that we're doing. So last year, Adam and I already started testing out which fairs are going to be worth our time. And honestly, a lot of the monthly events, so an event or craft fair that happens every single month, those are kind of on the back burner now. Those are not bringing the money, the income like they used to during COVID. Like Kate said, people, they had more things to do. It was more opportunities. Now more people, more customers are coming to like the street festivals, the Comic-Cons of the events, or specific focused festivals and fairs and such.
Yeah. It's interesting. I'm so glad you're looking at your data points too and seeing, okay, what is, I'm sure you're looking at, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm sure you're looking at things like the traffic, the number of sales you're having, the dollar amount of the sales, to the similar things that we look at when we're selling online or at a wholesale trade show or other types of areas, right? Like we want to assess and audit, is this the best place for me to be spending my time and my money and my energy? Emily and Kate, have you been doing kind of those same analysis of which markets are best and producing the best results and all that?
Definitely. We chatted a little bit about this before we started today, is that paying all the booth fees up front is really hard. So last year, I couldn't participate in a lot of the markets that I wanted to do just because it's too expensive. Like it was too many booth fees, higher booth fees. But I did find that it's almost like a pay to play, the spend more to earn more type of situation, in that if you do invest in those bigger events, you're going to get higher returns. So just being more strategic, definitely looked at that. Also looking at what products, because I have a wider range, from everything from stickers that are $4 to art prints that go up to like $35, and seeing what markets where I can get more bang for my buck, I guess, and like what I want to emphasize, because in some places sticker bar is hot. And so like I'll go through a lot of stickers, but in other places art prints were really successful. So being able to know which products to kind of focus on in which areas has been something I've been trying to hone in on.
That's smart. Emily, what kind of assessment and auditing have you been doing?
I kind of started like my career doing all of these events. So I do have a lot of data from over the years of how they've done. And last year, I consciously made the decision, knowing that the economy was going to probably have like a pretty significant impact, I actually went through and picked out like my best shows. And I went from 20 shows to 10 last year. And this year I'm down to 7. And between last year and the year before, my net was the same. So it just shows you don't have to go to all of the shows. You just pick the ones that you know you're going to make a profit, try to decrease costs. And that could mean like, oh, I'm not going to hire a helper this time, or I'm going to go to a lower cost hotel this time. Just stuff like that to see where you can cut costs, and then really focus your energy on making that show really good. Bring your A game, you know? And I feel like that for me is best, because I was getting so burnt out from all these shows anyways. And if you can do more with less, I feel like that's going to be beneficial in the long run. And you have a better relationship with the organizers from these events if you're really focusing your energy not only on being at the show, but connecting with the people organizing the show and really saying, hey, I'm here to stay. Give me a better booth spot.
stuff. Those relationships matter for sure, for a lot of different reasons. Okay, I know I kind of teased this earlier, but like, let's talk about what kind of shifts you're making and to adapt for the economy and the state of retail. Like Emily mentioned, she's doing fewer shows. She's being pickier about the shows. Kate says she's looking at her product line to see which one's going to have the maximum value and profit margin and all of that. Like, Danelle, is there anything you want to add to that, or like what shifts you're making?
Honestly, a lot of the shifts we're making right now is very kind of similar to what Emily's doing. So I will say this, booth fees are really expensive. I mean, for me, it's very normal for me to pay $300+ for a booth fee for either a one-day show. For a lot of people, that's a big, huge sticker shock. I've paid close to probably $800 for a weekend show. So like Emily, really focusing on the shows. Yes, the sticker shock is really scary for a show, but those are the shows that are going to be the most profitable. Like Kate said, it's the pay-to-play kind of thing. For us, because we don't do stationery, we do a lot of high-end bags and everything. It's just really focusing on the products that we know data-wise are the most popular, specific to the city that we're in, what customers like, and then also adding in our specialty items. For example, a lot of our customers are obsessed with our totes. We're getting ready to do a tote restock. So we'll have a couple of those during the craft fair. So just really a lot of huge, diverse things and just being really mindful about the price range, because we have items that are $200 and we have items that are $15. So I think if you are somebody who sells high-end items with high prices, just really having like a huge variety for every single customer, no matter their financial demographic, I guess.
Totally. Anyone want to add anything else, other shifts that you're making given the economy and state of things?
I think for me, at least, it's like kind of figuring out bundling options at markets. That's been a thing. Like Card Bar has been around, and I think a lot of us do a version of that, like buy four, get the fifth free, whatever it is. But I started applying that to my stickers as well, because I have enough SKUs to like do a sticker bar. And honestly, sticker bar carried my business for a while, and I was shocked. And because it's like a $4 item, and you're just like, wait, what? But people are willing to, and I did buy three, get the last one half off. So it wasn't one totally free, but people love a deal. They love to like mix and match things. They love that. So setting it up and like, hey, welcome. And I don't know, it was interesting that that's what people took to, and then figuring out what bundles of things people like and having that, because that increases my average order value. So for me, that's something that I'm exploring on like how I can do that more in my booth at events.
I think that's smart, because at that point in the process too, you've already invested to be there financially, time-wise, energetically. And so now it's a matter of how do we just get more out of each sale that we're having too. That's good. Okay. There are a couple questions. Or Emily, did you want to add anything there of shifts you're making? Or
so I go to a lot of festivals, and a lot of my stuff are very gifty, small impulse purchases. And I started moving towards kind of like an experience in the booth. So this next show and some of the shows I go to, I have a backdrop that you can take photos in front of with some of our characters. And then I do like a little spinner to get rid of items that don't move fast. So you can pay $5 to spin it. And that actually brings a lot of people in, and they'll like browse with it. So, and mystery bags and stuff like that. So creating new experiences or products without really creating new products could be beneficial too for people that have seen you at a show already and want something new. It's like, it's kind of new, but it's not, but it's still new.
I love what you're talking about of creating an experience. I mean, I can't tell you how many, even our farmers market here locally in Los Angeles, I take my kids on Saturday mornings and my 7-year-old beelines it for the dental office spinner that is like spinning the wheel. And like, we go to a different dentist, but she just loves that place. And so my point is creating these experiences where people, it's memorable and it draws people in. I think that's really great. Okay, there are some questions here that I definitely want to get to. Amy asked, also Rachel asked, what are you doing to, one, gather email addresses or contact information for your customers at markets? And then also tied to that, like, how are you nurturing them so they become longer customers of yours rather than just that one-time purchase? Do you have some suggestions there on what you've done? Kate, you want to start first?
Sure. I actually posted about this recently on Threads and got some interesting replies. So if you're not using Threads, it's I recommend it.
It's so fun.
Just for like gathering info from business people, because I don't touch very many customers there, but crowdsourcing info from businesses has been fantastic. But for me personally, obviously, I did the clipboard as most of us do for a while, but I got really burnt out on reading people's poopy handwriting. So I switched to the QR code, and I would find that even if it was just email address, people would open their phones, but then walk away and not put their email address in. They'd scan it and they're like, oh yeah, I'll do this. But then they like never finished the process. So I got really frustrated with that. So then now I have kind of like a combo of the clipboard and the QR code. My issue is my booth is like overflowing with stuff. I was going to say crap, but my own products are not crap.
No, they're not.
I have like such limited space that even setting out a clipboard is hard because there's just not a space to put the clipboard down. So I need to figure out, but I need to make it more of a priority because that is how you get the longer term customers and get them to come back and whatnot. So I do need to put more of a priority on that confession because I'm kind of terrible at that. The bonus for me is that because I've done a lot of markets in smaller areas and very consistently, like we do the monthly markets, I do have regulars who come back and like shop me regularly. They get a set of cards and then they come back. So it's kind of been natural for me for the most part because I live in a smaller community. But yeah, it's something that I should definitely work on. So I don't know that I have a whole lot of advice to give. I've just been very fortunate that I do get returning folks.
Awesome. Danella, are you guys doing the QR code? Are you doing the handwritten thing? What are you doing? And are you offering any incentives to people when they sign up?
Yeah, so we do the QR code. So we have the QR code in our business card already. And then the QR code links to both our newsletter, our website, all the social media, because I mean, it says it verbally on there, but there's a lot of tech savvy people like, oh, QR code, let me scan it. And then we have it kind of in our mirror because we have customers who try on our bags. It's on the mirror. We have it in front in the checkout stand. The hard truth about newsletter signups is you can't really force people to sign up for a newsletter, even if you have an incentive like, oh, you'll get 10% off your next order, because easily those, it kind of is like a 50-50. You have a customer who will continue to be on your newsletter list. And then the other half like, okay, I got my 10% off. I'm going to sign out. We also try, our incentive is when we do the checkout process. So it's kind of like a verbiage, both my husband and I say, he's like, oh yeah, if you join our early access crew, that's what we call our newsletter folks, you get first dibs for any upcoming releases and restocks. And it also helps too for folks who see something they like, but we already sold out on. I think it really just has to do, when it comes to newsletter signups, there's a whole, like, for example, your website, do you have a pop-up ad for newsletter signups? Do you have a whole site dedicated just for newsletters, even if it's in like your about me or contact us kind of thing? So it's a lot of plugging and playing. And then even when you're on social media, if for folks who are on Instagram or TikTok, it's advertising like, hey, if you want to get the latest update, or if you want to join to get first dibs shopping or restock before the site opens, please join our newsletter. Here's the link to sign up. So at craft fairs, it's really, the hard truth is it's really hard to force people, even if they do sign up with a clipboard. So that's kind of my take on newsletter signups.
Totally. Emily, do you have a different strategy that you use or things that are working well for you?
So I've actually been trying to grow my Instagram. So a lot of mine are Instagram based. So I have a big QR code. A lot of my audience is younger, so they like the QR code. And if they follow, they get a sticker, and usually it's a second sticker. So it's like misprinted in some ways. So I can't really sell it anyways. And they really like that experience. And I think usually right after the show, I'll put a post out for the mailing list, because I do a monthly little calendar thing, just like for funsies that I do. And they can download that if they join the mailing list. So I usually try to like organize it right after the event where that post goes out. So they join or they follow me on Instagram, and then they'll get that post like right after, hopefully. So that has helped a little bit. Yeah, that was pretty good flash show for Instagram following specifically.
So I just had an idea. I don't know if it's a good one or a bad one, but I'm going to share it nonetheless, and you all can decide if you want to use it. So given that like asking somebody to follow you on Instagram is like a lower lift thing, right? It's less of a commitment than giving out your email address. I love the idea of the QR leading to Instagram, where you're then connected. And then even a day or two later, you could go back and see who followed you during the market, and you could leave them a voice memo that just says, hey, thanks for stopping by our show, our booth this weekend at the show. We really appreciate you. If you'd like to use this coupon code on your next offer or your next order, feel free. Or you could just say, here is a link to our website if you want to sign up. I feel like you could take the relationship then from just getting them on Instagram and then looking at who followed you during that time span and then carrying on the conversation in Insta. And you don't have to be all salesy in the DM. You know, your voice message can just be simply like, thanks for coming. We really appreciate it. We love connecting with folks. And if there's anything we can do for you, let me know. That might be a more natural way to like move that relationship forward. So
I like that. I have one of those dot cards you can tap and it brings up like a link tree menu. That's where I get a lot of Instagram, like, oh, do you have an Instagram? Like, yeah, let me tap your card. And so I do that. And then for a while, I was following up at the end of the market day and being like, hey, thanks for the follow. But I never thought to add the incentive and like move that relationship forward. I like that. I would definitely add that to my arsenal of things.
And I saw in the chat, like some people are like, whoa, voice memos scare me. Friends, my report card always said Katie talks too much in class. So like, this is clearly where I was meant to be in life. But you could also send just like a text DM, right? That just says, hey, thanks for stopping by. It doesn't have to be a voice message. I do think there is something to be said though for the voice DMs are under a minute. They cut you off at a minute. And there's something to be said about hearing someone else's voice. Like it is a lot more personal, but if you're not ready for that, you don't want to do that. Just send a text message.
And you could have the text already written, like the verbiage already written in your notes app. And if you're not comfortable doing that yet, so you don't have to type it hopefully 100 times. I mean, how many followers are you getting during market? But then you could just kind of copy and paste it if you wanted to try to like streamline that.
Totally. Okay. Well, that was a fun little brainstorm. I like that. Okay. I think a lot of folks are asking too. I know that Brigida just did like a 5-day show and we had somebody else in the community that did a 30-day show. My mind just like blew when I heard that it was 30 days long. I know, Emily, you've done long shows like that too. And Brigida was asking like, what are some logistical things to keep in mind when I'm doing these longer shows when I want to hire somebody and bring somebody in to help? Emily, do you want to talk about how you've brought help in? And then we can go to the other ladies if they've done the same.
I usually do it by sales commissions. So they get like 15%, which really motivates people to do well, I think, at the show. But I do guarantee like a minimum, like if they don't hit like a certain amount, I'll still pay them like that amount.
So it's an hourly rate plus commission on anything they sell while they're there. Is that kind of how you set them?
It's commission, but if they don't hit like a certain amount with the commission, I still pay them for the hourly. So they're not under the hourly rate that they're supposed to be getting. So they have a minimum that they will be guaranteed to get. So it's still worth for them to go out, but it's still motivating for them to sell. So that has helped. Did that answer the question? I'm not sure.
Yeah. I mean, I think there, Brigida and others are just looking for like, how do I hire help for this? And are there logistics I should keep in mind? I think an hourly rate is the normal thing. Doing commission, like Emily's talking about, with like a minimum. I like that you do the minimum because that tells people like you will for sure get paid. And that makes it a better experience for them and an easier yes for them. Danelle, I know you have both you and Adam working your booth. Are you hiring help or bringing help in, or are you two just working? Kate, yeah. You're hiring Kate?
She hired me.
Yeah. How did you guys structure that?
It was for a short time, but I actually wanted to say the other side where I've actually worked for a vendor at an event. So a friend who needed a lot of help for Artist Alley for Fanime and also the Cherry Blossom Festival. So she asked me, and of course, like it's easy because I already know the behind the scenes, but how she paid me was just a day rate. Plus she covered my gas and my food, which she didn't have to, but she was like, no, it's fine. I can pay for your gas and your food. And then we did like a whole training during setup because she was allowed to set up the day before. And it was perfect because I had to look at how she structured her POS system for checkout. Because every event, I mean, every business does their POS completely different. They have different sales, they have different tactics. So she gave me like the word verbiage of what she likes to do, how she likes to approach customers, her types of customers, because her customers and my customers are completely two different types of people. And then just kind of that. And then for me, when we had to hire short term for our business, I did hire Kate and I hired a family member to do that. I was very, very like, Kate can attest to this, I'm very like type A when it comes to certain things. So I had passwords, pretty much a handbook, like an employee handbook, like passwords if something were to happen. Wi-Fi went down, this is what you can do. These are the type of deals we offer. These are the type of verbiage we say. So, I mean, it's just really making sure you have time prior to the event to have those conversations with either if it's a family member or a friend who's doing the help for you. I would really, really make sure that, you know, they're not tech savvy, but make sure they feel comfortable with the POS system either you're using.
Yeah, that's really great advice, especially on the messaging and the offers that you're putting out there, like any incentives that you're offering. We want people to be knowledgeable about the product line, but we also want them to understand what our brand stands for, what our values are, and how they're representing who we are as well. So thanks for that, Danella. That's really great. Kate, you want to talk about this too from the side of working or hiring?
Yeah, I mean, Danella did hire me for a show, but I think I had a leg up in that A, we're really close friends, and B, we've been next to each other at so many events. Like, I can give their spiel in the tone that they say it in. Like, I can match Adam's energy. I can match Danella's energy. So I think that was helpful. But also vice versa, Danella has stepped in and watched my booth on multiple times. We'll ignore the sticker fiasco pricing, Danella.
She priced it wrong.
But she was selling things for $2 and $7. So I don't know. She's like, she broke even in the end. But one thing that I learned, and I've been next to vendors who've hired someone like basically night before and are like frustrated that the person isn't selling well for them. And I was just like, oh my gosh, especially as a former trainer, just like, you gave them no tools for success. So I know when Danella's watched my booth, I've now started to keep a list of what things cost and whatnot. Make sure you have that information handy for them, especially if you don't do like barcodes or anything like that. Because for me, I know the name of my item, so I can just look it up in my POS. But if someone was flying blind, they're going to be scrolling through 100 cards just to like find the card that they need. So I guess just like, have that information handy for them. Give them the story of why you created something, because people are going to ask questions about what's your process, and they're not going to realize that the person behind the counter or whatever, the table, is not the artist. So like, oh, she watercolors all of this and her inspirations come from nature, and just like having some of those FAQs, I guess, that you get asked a lot at markets, having that handy. But yeah, also the technical stuff, like Danella and I, like how, because she does Square Reader, I have a Shopify reader. So just going through those logistics. But yeah, the story part is really interesting because your story sells, especially at these markets. And I think I'm thinking of a time in particular where the vendor was very frustrated that the like 15-year-old wasn't selling things, but they didn't know the whole story behind it. So they had a harder time connecting with people.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And that's true in our business outside of markets too, right? What did you want to add, Emily?
Oh, I was having flashbacks when everybody was talking. So I do remember now what I did. It's been a whole year since I hired people, but I do have a barcoding system. So every single product we have is barcoded with just a SKU barcode. So all they have to do is scan it, which is a really easy pickup for a lot of people, mostly when I'm hiring people to, or just asking for help for a small period of time. They don't have to know kind of what the price is, although I do have a cheat sheet of like price in case people ask. And then similarly, I have usually a few pages. I usually print out one page with all the travel information because we do travel shows. So I did send people out with suitcases to set up a booth for me. And I had the craziest like 7-page diagram of how to set everything up with pictures, which I took in my garage. And then I had a picture of the suitcase of where to find everything. It's like diagrammed out because it gets really crazy. And then the weight limits are 50 pounds. So if you don't put the right things in the right suitcases, you kind of are in trouble. Yeah. So a lot of diagrams and stuff like that. And just over time, I had like a Q&A page that all the helpers eventually asked a bunch of questions. And I just listed it all out, including like where bathrooms are, because I don't know why people keep asking that question specifically. But yeah, so I remember now I do have a system.
I mean, I know that probably to some people sounds like overkill, the diagramming and the videos and the this and that, but I love that. I think that is how you stay organized. It's how somebody else can easily step in for you when you need it. I applaud you, Emily, with the level of detail that you have there, because that enables you to do 20 shows a year. I mean, to do 20 shows a year, you have to be organized. You have to make sure that everyone knows exactly where they need to be. And like you said, the travel details can get really complicated too. So
it's literally similar to what Emily said. I was like, oh my God, I'm getting flashbacks too as we're all talking. No, I think it's so important, especially I think someone asked in labs about the unloading and loading out process.
They did. That was where I was heading next.
Because sometimes in cases, you can't always be there to unload yourself when the day is over. And that's so important because at the end of the day, whether it's you or your worker, you're so tired from like a long shift and you're like, I just want to toss everything. But you remember like, this is my inventory. This matters. So just making sure you even take photos like this is how everything has to look like. It's so like, I don't want to use the word anal, but you know, again, these are your products and you're hiring somebody to do a job for you and you're paying them. And so just remember that like you're paying them for a reason to help you on your business. And so you have to show them literally how everything has to look at the end of the day. And just same thing, like Emily said, make sure you do photos of how your booth is going to look like, how to like restock items when there's like a lull. So I think those are just little things.
So Emily talked about how she, thank you, Danelle, that was wonderful. Emily talked about how she packs everything and how like she's very meticulous about that. And that helps for the loading in and out process. Kate, Danelle, do you have any other suggestions?
Invest in a great wagon.
Oh my God, yes.
Whatever it is, please, for the love of tacos, get one with a high weight capacity. Some people prefer the flat. I like the sides because I have a lot of crap. Well, okay, my stuff is not crap, but I have a lot of crap that like moves around a lot. So I like to have the sides on there. But I rocked a Dick's Sporting Goods one for so long until the wheels just gave out. And then my next one, I decided to invest in one with like a higher weight capacity and has these metal bars that I thought were annoying at first, but they can hold the weight of my tables and my canopy. So like I can put my canopy on my wagon and it depends. I also try to do shows where you can just load from your car because it's easier, but that's not always possible. Sometimes Danelle and I did SJ Made and like you, and I'm sure Emily's come across this in large conventions, like you're going through a convention hall with a lot of stuff. Bungee cords to bungee that crap right to your wagon definitely helps. I personally have a rooftop carrier, and then I had it previous to this, but like so much of my long stuff that I don't want in my car, like I have it, obviously it has to be hoistable because I'm putting it in my rooftop carrier myself, but that was a big one for me as far as like loading and also not creating like bins and stuff that are ridiculously heavy. Like it's nice to go in one shot, right? Like it's nice to not have as many things. But for me and my, I'm like, I'm post 40. Like I need to worry about my back. I need to worry about things. So yeah, I just like, don't make stuff heavy for yourself if you do a lot of shows. I mean, if you can just knock it out a couple times a year, maybe that's not a concern, but I do upwards of 30 shows a year. So it's like, I have to be worried about that at my elderly crumbling body age.
Give yourself more credit, girl. Okay. Jesse asked, do you do anything to stop folks from taking pictures of your stuff without buying? Emily, you probably get this a lot given the size of the shows and the type of shows you go to, although I'm sure all three of you get it. So let's talk about it. Emily, what do you do? What's your stance on photos? Do you try to stop it? Do you care? If you do try to stop it, what do you do?
I feel like this argument has been going back and forth forever, ever since I started. Mostly in the artist alley where a lot of people are artists and mostly with AI now. But I don't really stop people. If anything, it gets me sales. It's really interesting because a lot of times at these conventions I go to, there's entrance fees and not everybody can go. And some of the entrance fees are like hundreds of dollars, $100 to $200. And most of the time I notice they're taking pictures for people that don't have badges. And they're like taking pictures for their sister. They're taking pictures for their like parents to see what they want to buy. So I think mine is a very specific case because of that. A lot of the shows I do go to, including night markets, all have entrance fees. And sometimes they sell out. A lot of times there's shows that sell out almost a week in. So it's very, in my opinion, different from craft show markets. So I actually encourage people, hey, like if you need to take pictures, that's fine. But I do try to stick a card in there while they're taking a picture. I'm like, here's my business card.
Yeah, please tag me. Tag me for sure.
Yeah.
What about you, Danella?
Well, for my husband and I, because we do live sewing demos, we get a lot of like sewists, whether they're hobbyists, they have their own business, really inspecting our bags and try to take photos. kind of like Emily, and I'm sure Kate can attest, there's only so much you can do to, you can have a bunch of signs. There's only so much you can do for folks to stop taking photos. Cause sometimes there are people like, oh, I want to send this to like my mom to make sure she wants this X, Y, and Z. And you're like, yeah, sure. You don't know if it's a lie or not a lie. Emily said it best, because I'm going to start trying to do that now. It's just, here's a business card if you're really interested, just in case you want to follow up and buy later. I know Kate has a really cute sign, though, for her cards, because she often, I see it happen, again, because we are often at craft fairs and we're next to each other. I literally see it happen, even with the sign, but I think, Kate, you should tell them about your sign. It's so cute.
Well, I just have one that's like, no photos, and if you're going to try to be sneaky about it, at least tag me in the photo. It works and it doesn't. I put it right next to my most photographed cards to like try, and I get it. It's just frustrating to me because, and I'm sure a lot of fellow people feel this way. And I understand, Emily, like what you're saying, and I agree with that. And if somebody says like, I want to make sure that this matches my mom's room or like whoever, you know, especially with the art, I don't necessarily mind. It's the greeting cards that kill me, because like, I'm sending this to my best friend. Send them the fucking card. Like, sorry, but like you're denying me $5 to set, you know, $5.50. Like, you're cheating me out of money to send it to your group text when like you could have bought that and sent, mailed it off to somebody. So like, I get frustrated with the greeting cards. I don't really care as much with stickers and the art prints as much, because you like 9 times out of 10 with the art prints, it's to make sure that it works for somebody.
But also the stickers are such a low price point too. And you're usually offering bundles. So like, buy 4 for your friends and give them
right more. And give them out. Like, yeah, it's the greeting cards that kill me. It's two of my cards in particular are photographed all the time. And it's just, it's really frustrating. But at the same time, I like the idea of the business card thing. And I just said on the call, like, I haven't ordered business cards in a while, but I could just set like the business cards next to the cards and just be like, take one while you're here.
Yeah.
While you're photographing this. So I don't know. I guess I have mixed feelings about it.
Totally. Netta, I see your question in the Q&A. It's so specific to your brand. Can we take that one back to Labs Community so we can talk about the pros and cons of which shows are right for you? I think that would be a better fit for us to do there. And then let's see, we've got a number of questions in the chat. Thank you for being flexible. I appreciate that.
I was going to say something, Sarge, because I know there's a couple folks on here that sell apparel as well. If you have a mirror, please, for same thing, for the love of God, put, or tacos, whatever.
Love of tacos.
Please put your Instagram handle, because I get a lot of young teens, love them, but also it's very annoying where they want to take selfies on your mirror because they just see your mirror like, oh, a mirror, let me take a selfie with my friends. I wish I could show you, but our mirror is hanging up in our studio right now. I literally have like a cute sign that says like, you're looking radiant today, which is nice for customers who do try on our stuff. But we also put our Instagram handle because same thing. It's like, people are just taking advantage of my mirror because they just want to take a photo of their mirror. And that's another strategy about setting up your booth space and layout, is having your mirror not like right at the front and center, right at the corner. Try to have it inside the booth so you could deviate the customers who just want to take a photo of themselves on a mirror. We've had that happen a lot.
I'm sure. Okay. Hillary asks, I know this varies from state to city, but what do you charge? What do you pay people hourly minimum to work your markets? Can you guys quickly share what you paid, like what the dollar rate was? Hourly rate?
I think for me personally, from the friend, I want to say I got paid, again, it was like different because I only worked a certain amount of hours. I didn't work the full day. I want to say I got paid $200-something for the day, but that included, she covered my gas and my food for whether it was lunch, snacks, and whatever. And I got a little discount if I wanted to buy something after the show. I think it was 200. I could be totally wrong. I don't think it was, but something around like that.
That's helpful. It's just helpful to hear. Emily, do you remember what your minimum with the commission was?
I'm pretty sure I just did California minimum and it's changed now. So I'm not actually sure what it is now, but I usually try to stick to that. And then I do give them food on top of that. So I think I give them 100 extra on top of that for food, gas, that kind of stuff.
Okay, cool. Thanks. Emily asked, how do you know how much inventory to bring? I feel like this is like we need the magic eight ball to like turn over. So who wants to share how you kind of decide? Kate, you want to start?
It's a never ending battle of like what to bring. But for my regular everyday markets, because I'm doing it every day, feels like it. is I bring 10 of each card, 15 to 20 of my best sellers, just in case. Same with stickers, 10 of each design. Again, best sellers, I'll bring a few more just in case. That I just, so I keep a plastic bin of cards that are just my market cards. So it's kind of separate inventory for me. And then before each market, I'll go through and restock it. So I don't like unload my inventory every time. I kind of just have the market inventory. And then for mugs, which I haven't done in a while, but I need to bring them back, I try to bring like two or three of each design. I don't sell too many of those. And art prints, I try to do at least two of every design, which I have a poop ton of art prints, so it's a lot of stuff. But my best sellers, I'll bring like 5 to 10 of each of those. But a lot of that has like stayed over. So I'm not going through all of that very quickly, but I like to have them on hand in case something sells. But yeah, I found that having 10 of each card is generally pretty good for like decent markets. When I prepped for large holiday markets, I definitely upped that. I think I did 15 of each card. And then my best sellers, I probably did like 25 to 30 of the best sellers for the larger markets.
And Kate, just for clarification, that's in total. Those are the numbers you gave us are total for a weekend market, so to speak, or is that per day?
For the weekend. I do a lot of one-day events. I don't do too many two-day events. So that is mostly one day. I did a holiday one and I stayed with Danella and I like overshot how much I prepped a ton, but it was nice to have it because then I had it for markets going forward. But yeah, I definitely over prepped for that one.
Okay. So it's more that was, those numbers were per day basically. And if you needed more, you'd add more. Danella, how do you kind of, I mean, I know you guys are creating stuff on site too with Adam Sewing and everything. I know you're not making things on demand for customers, but how much inventory are you kind of aiming for?
So we typically do two-day markets. So it's a little bit different with a one-day market. So for 2 days, we try to have per design for the bags, we try to have between such a large number, but for our crossbody bags, we try to have at least 15. Our tabletop bags, so the ones that we just mainly put on the table, they can be hung up, but they're just on the table. That ranges from about like 8 to 12. It just depends on the designs. Our smaller items, so like our wristlets, our little mini wallets, those we try to have more of because I think earlier Kate mentioned it about like the bundle deals. We do a bundle deal as well. And so those are the ones that kind of go by really fast. And we got to make sure we have those on demand. If you're the type of person or business owner, sorry, that likes to, same thing like us, we have stuff where we're making on site, whether it's buttons, it's artwork. I try to have we both, especially for Adam, we try to prep those the night before and we count those towards the inventory. So let's say in our purse rack, we only have this certain crossbody design called Vanilla on the rack. We're going to have about 5 to 8 more ready soon because we're currently making them on site. I hope that helps. Again, mine's different because we sell bags and not stationary goods. So that's a little bit different for some folks.
Emily sells higher priced goods. She sells equestrian wear. So it's a different market too. And I think it's good to hear different types of products. Okay, Emily, you have a really robust number of SKUs. So how are you managing inventory for this?
Yeah, so I actually have 3 tiers for every single product, the best sellers and then the mid-tier sellers and then like the really not going to sell, but I'm just there to pad up the selection options. So for stickers, I bring 86 designs to a show. And keep in mind, I am traveling to these shows, so I cannot restock. I cannot go home and restock most of the time. The high tier ones, like the best sellers, anyone from 40 all the way to 25. And then the mid tiers are like 20. And then the lower tiers are 15, 10, that kind of thing. And then the greeting cards are like, I think it's like 12, 6, and then like I have a 4 tier in there. So every product type has their own, how many I'm bringing for each tier. And usually I try to pull data from a show if I've been to that show before, obviously pull from the previous show and average it out. But if I haven't been to that show before, I try to pull from a show that is similar in size and audience. So Comic-Cons have their own audience, anime expos have their own, and then markets have their own audience. So I try to pull a selection of shows within the similar one. But if it's like your first few shows, I think if you have the space, probably better to bring more mostly of stuff that you already know sells well online or you just really like, because if you like the product, your audience will like the product too. And then I used to do a lot of apparel, which was really, really bulky, so I couldn't bring a lot of them. So I actually have a menu item that I print out and can show people, and they can order directly from the menu when it sells out, and I provide free shipping. And I've actually sold, like, I think last time I did that when it was a really busy market, I think I sold like 40 t-shirts like that, and I'm just like packaging them after the show. It gets really insane. And I do that for socks as well. So I always try to keep one sample not sold unless it's like the last hour of the show. And people will do that. Just be like, hey, it's free shipping. If you pay now, it'll get there in 2 days. And a lot of people will do that. Mostly with shirts and socks, you have sizing issues. Like if you really don't have their size, make sure to have, I pre-count stock before a show specifically for this reason, so I can ship shirts.
All right, I already blew the swearing jar wide open.
No one heard that.
We'll put an EU at this one. Go ahead, Emily.
So I know exactly how much I have to ship and I don't run out and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Okay. That was long-winded.
No. That was super helpful. I think it's important to hear the different methods and details of it too, right? Megan asked about weather. I know that Danella and Kate, you do a lot of outdoor shows. You talked about your canopies already. She's in Texas, so there's lots of dirt and wind. Do you have any suggestions on how to kind of protect her products from the nature?
Oh, we have stories. We have stories.
Kate's going to laugh at me because I am the worst one, because we, again, do a lot of outdoor shows. I don't even remember her name. Our poor had for like 4 years. We were pushing her to her limits. Like she already had bolts gone. She had a stanky leg, which in the Bay, that means like the leg is falling apart. She was a hot mess, but we kept pushing her to her limits. I think it was literally our last December show, literally last year, where she's like, I'm done. Please put me out of commission. But when it comes to weather, I hate dirt shows. I've had my fair share of dirt shows. It's not just the products that get dirty. My husband and I, we get dirty. It's like a whole thing. When it comes to weather, okay, so there's a lot of different types of weather, I guess. For at least rainy day shows, I really recommend making sure your tent has those canopy walls just to protect yourself. And then you have to really shift gears on how you do your booth layout. If you're the type of person like me who likes to have things outside, you really have to bring it inside the booth just for protection purposes. And then for sunny shows, those are really hard. Like we've had our fair share of like 100 degree weather shows. Kate can attest to this. Really, I think it's different for stationary folks because I saw there was a question inside labs about things melting. Just really shifting gears and bringing your tables in. You have to kind of follow the sun. With dusty shows, there was a craft fair that Kate and I did that was on a farm. I don't know how we did it. There was 5 different types of terrain. There was like cement, there was grass, there was little rocks, there was dirt. And the weather was weird. In regards to dust, you really have to just be on top of just sweeping. I don't even know if there's really any good advice. It's just really trying your hardest to protect your products, really like sweeping up as much as you can when there's downtime, but mentally preparing yourself, I guess, for the weather.
I want to rapid fire this because I know we're running out of time, but okay, campy weights. Get yourself a lot of them. I use all of them. Use all of the weights. Get a good set. Get a good canopy, a good quality canopy. The name of the canopy just left my head, but not just like your standard easy up. Get a good one. With walls, like Danella said, the canopy weights that have their like U-shaped, I put them on the base of my card rack. So I have a standing card rack and I'll put a full set of weights on the rack so it doesn't move around in the wind. And that thing is like to the ground. Like I've gotten comments from people that are like, how are you a stationary business in this wind and your stuff is not flying all over the place? I know that it's controversial to rubber band greeting cards, but I definitely will rubber band greeting cards for my sticker display. I use kind of like a shoe organizer, but it's a cell phone organizer for classrooms because it's all consistent pocket sizes and they're smaller than the shoes. And I put the stickers in there. That keeps things really protected. Do not use compostable crappy sleeves if you're going to do ones in hot weather because they do melt. That was brought up in the community. Flap and seal bags. I moved away from them for obviously out of ease, but for art prints in inclement weather, they're really helpful. My first ever market, it rained really hard. The corner of my canopy collapsed and a bunch of rain fell on all of my art prints. And the level of panic was next level, but they were all in flap and seal bags. And I saved most of my inventory. There was only two prints that got damaged. So I'm a big fan of the flap and seal for obviously higher price point items. And when you can, my greeting cards aren't like that. Store them in bins with lids. So if it's raining at the end of the market, your stuff is protected. And yeah, I think that's it.
That was great. That was really great. We only have 3 minutes left and we have one question left, which I think we can cover in that time. Pamela says, how much cash do you bring for change? Are most of your folks checking out electronically, I would assume? Are you bringing any cash?
So if you're like me who forgets to bring cash, I like to lie and be like, oh my gosh, what a coincidence. I totally forgot to bring cash. We can only do card transactions. But when you do bring cash, I think you should have, for me personally, think about if you've done cash before and you're trying to figure out like, okay, how much cash do I bring? I try to bring at least 5s, 10s, and 20s just because we have a higher price range. I bring about, now I started bringing cash, Kate can laugh because I always have to ask her for cash transactions. I bring about close to $250 to $300 for me personally. But in some of the cases where you forgot your cash box, just be like, oh, what a coincidence. Totally forgot the cash. We can only accept card transactions right now or tap. So that's what I like to do in those situations.
Emily, what about you?
I have actually a list of the cash I bring. So it's like 31s and then like 25s. So I bring the same amount every single time. So I know exactly how much I made at the end of the day. I just like recount it. Nowadays, although like back in the day, we do a lot of cash transaction. It was really crazy. People thought I was like a stripper or something. And then when I was depositing cash, it was really weird. And then now it's almost like 60 to 70% tap. So it's definitely has moved away from it, which is nice because I don't like touching Grumman cash.
Fair enough. Kate, what about you?
I used to be a teller. So this is, mine is skewed because I have a full blown cash box and often give Danella and Adam change. But I don't know if I have like a full amount. I carry a lot of cash, unfortunately. It's probably not the wisest, but I try to keep a clip of at least one each denomination. A clip is 25 bills of that denomination. And I have a roll of each coin, but I mostly go through quarters. So I go through that. I just try to think in the price point range. So like, I think I've up to my ones and fives now based on the change that I give. But I do keep a lot of 20s on me just because oftentimes people are like, I can't break this 100 anywhere. Can I break it with you? So my perspective is probably a little skewed. I don't have a total, but I love that you count your cash afterwards. That is warming my teller heart.
Yes, absolutely. Also, don't forget you need the cash on hand to break Danella's cash. So
yeah.
So you need that. All right. This was a fantastic conversation. I appreciate the three of you so much for coming back to share how things have shifted, what you're doing now. Really great questions from our audience. If there's anything we did not cover today and you'd like more information on this, you can go ahead and leave comments with the replay and these ladies can weigh in or I can weigh in and we can answer those questions back inside of the community. So thank you to the three of you for coming today. And then I forgot my announcements. I think we have the progress pods next week on Wednesday. So that is a really great time for you to go and talk about anything, your products, your people, your systems, anything you want. So definitely join those pods because they're a lot of fun. But again, thank you ladies for being here. We'll get the replay up in the community soon and we'll talk with you all soon. Have a great day.
Bye.
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 I love our coffee chat conversations in labs. It's a chance for our community members to share what's working for them in real time. So thank you again to Kate, Emily, and Danella for sharing so generously and allowing us to republish a portion of this conversation on the podcast. I've shared all of their links in the show notes so you can follow them on social and check out their sites. Now, if you learned something new while listening today, please share today's episode with a friend. And if you could take 2 minutes to leave us a 5-star rating and write a review, we would be incredibly grateful. You can do that at ratethispodcast.com/PTP for proof to product. Again, you can leave that 5-star rating and write your review at ratethispodcast.com/PTP. Thanks for listening until the end. I'll be back next week with a new episode.